So, okay, well, oh, yes, sorry, I made too many copies of the handout, so I'll take one for myself. So, the last page of the handout is the blackboard shots from last time. Printed upside down, sorry, you have to turn it around. So the last page of the handout is the blackboard shots from last time, and I just wanted to remind you that given a metamonoid, or basically we found that lots of properties of knot theory can be described in terms of metamonoids. So genus, links, three manifolds, genus, ribbon knots, etc. Not that much of etc., but some more. And there are several open problems around it. Several open problems and several examples that were not fully worked out. So, for example, getting the fundamental group of a three manifold from that fundamental group invariant of tangles, I haven't sort of wrote it down. I haven't worked it out. I don't know if you can say anything about the fundamental group of ribbon knots by understanding them in this language. And the most important is that what I'm going to do today is I'm going to describe to you a ridiculously simple metamonoid and an invariant constructed from it, yet I don't fully understand it from this language. And even what I understand is not written. So there's a lot to do, basically. Anyway, let me start with this ridiculously simple metamonoid. So, the story starts with a ridiculously simple-minded operation that exists on matrices, and which hardly anybody is aware of. So let me tell you what it is. So suppose you have a matrix M. So a matrix M defines a relation between two N variables, yi and xi, and the relation is yi is equal to, oh, you know, maybe I should have called it, you know what, fine. So yi is equal to, so you know what, I'll call the entries of M, A, I, J, sorry. So yi is equal to sum A, I, J, X, J. Okay? And there is a simple-minded way to turn this into an n minus 1 by n minus 1 matrix maybe I'll describe it the way I like to think of it. Okay? So the way I like to think of it is so this matrix is a machine that takes n inputs and produces n outputs. So the inputs in our case are x1 up to xn, and the outputs are y1 up to yn. And I think of it in sort of mechanical terms. So think of a foosball table. Is this what it's called, this game? So sort of you have these bars and you push and they come out on the other side, except it's sort of a mechanically improved or mechanically enhanced football table, So, you know, there are, I don't know, sort of various some machinery inside, so that when you push the handles here, they move, the output moves in certain, as in certain linear combinations of these, but not necessarily the same way. It's not the identity matrix. So anyway, what you can then do is you can decide that you clamp one input to one output. So you basically, you know, add a little sort of bar on the outside that connects one output to one input. And now you have one input less. Basically, now this is the motion of this one is forced. So you have n minus one inputs, and you can only and you just stare at the way the remaining n minus one outputs moved. So that's an operation from n by n matrices to n minus one by n minus one matrices. Now it's not fully well defined because you know, maybe clamping this. So for example, if the output Y1, or if the matrix M was transmitting X2 straight into Y1, then clamping them would be ill-defined, right? You'd have freedom of motion, and basically it would be ill-defined, right? So this is not a fully well-defined operation. Right, again, if mechanically these were the same, then clamping them would be loose. Okay? So this is not a fully well-defined operation, but it is well-defined if I'm forbidding this possibility. So if the matrix coefficient going from x2 to y1 is not equal to 1. In all other cases, it is well-defined. And one way to ensure this is to say that, first of all, M should be a matrix which is somehow near the identity, and the sense of near would depend on the context, okay? And also, I never clamp a strand to itself. I never clamp X1 to Y1. I only clamp different things, okay? So this gives me an operation M, I, J, K, which goes from the set of S by S matrices. Let's write it differently. So let's declare that M of S is the set of S by S matrices, which are in some sense near the identity. And this gives me an operation. So you clamp I and J and call you call the input corresponding to Y1. Basically, you call these two the new K. Okay? So you call this one, rename it to K. So this gives you an operation from M of S union IJ into M of S union K. So, right? And clearly, visually, this operation satisfies the meta-associativity axiom. So if I now clamp this to yet another one, it's clear that it doesn't matter in which order I've put the clamps. So therefore, the set of S by S matrices which are near the identity form a metamonoid. Okay? So I say that hardly anybody knows about it, and indeed hardly anybody knows about it, but it's not that nobody knows about it, because in fact this operation appears in so-called linear control theory. So I googled linear control theory and pasted for you sort of a part of the Wikipedia entry for linear control theory, and it's the closed loop transfer function section. And so, I mean, it's not exactly what I want. They add some superfluous things. But basically, this happens in mechanical engineering. So, you have some, basically it's called, in mechanical engineering, it's called feedback. So you have some machine with inputs and outputs, and you connect one output to one input. So the classical image you should have is, what are they called? These regulators in steam engines? So
the thing with the...
The thing, yeah, that opens up because of, you know what I'm talking about? Those...
Yeah, to let out steam.
What?
To let out steam.
No, not to let out steam.
It's like,
so
the engine spins it,
right?
And it has two balls, and centripetal force, or and like the other one or whatever, lifts it, and this like opens some valve, so it can't.
Right, right.
And then that lowers the amount of water
that
goes into the engine, or say, I don't know. It somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, sorry. Anyway, so people in linear control theory wrote the formulas for what does this operation look like, okay? And the formulas are on the handout, okay? But I could compute these formulas myself. I don't need to look it up in Wikipedia. So how would you compute the formulas? So actually, all that we are doing is we're taking these equations and we're adding yet another equation. And the yet another equation is y1 is equal to x2. So we add to this collection of equations the equation y1 is equal to x2. And now we try to understand how the remaining x's determine the remaining y's. Now, this is linear algebra. In principle, it's all done on, you know, this is systems of equations. I could do it by hand. Okay, I really could. But you know, on the other hand, I have a computer, so I will do it using the computer. Okay? So let's do it. So, okay, so first of all, okay, so now I'm on the, over there. So first of all, let me load the knot theory package for use later. And now let's start with this. So, I set the matrix M to be alpha, beta, theta, gamma, delta, epsilon, phi, psi, uppercase chi. And let me explain why I chose these particular letters. I'm thinking of the matrix M not as a 3x3 matrix, but as an n by n matrix with highlighted first row and first column. So basically, the first row is this, the first two rows are highlighted. So the first two rows are this, the first two columns are that. And then theta is a name for all remaining columns. Okay? So theta is in fact a row, not a single entry. And the way to see that that it's a row is because it has a line in the middle. Okay? And then, likewise, epsilon is a whole row, and again, it has a line in the middle. And then, likewise, phi and psi are columns, and chi is an n minus 2 by n minus 2 block, and it looks like a block. Okay? So, let me write the equation y1, y2, y3 is equal to m times x1, x2, x3, And again, you should be thinking of Y3 as being the aggregate of all other Ys, and likewise X3 is the kind of aggregate of all other X's. So let me write this. And so unfortunately, Mathematica interprets this as the vector y1, y2, y3 is equal to the vector alpha x1 plus beta x2 plus theta x3, and so on. This vector is equal to that vector. But I want to interpret it as just a collection of equations, right? And I have to remind you that Mathematica, much of it is just a language for manipulating trees. So I think with this operation we haven't seen yet. Okay, so the two trees that we see here are, the tree that we see here is the tree equal, right? So equal stands for equality, and then on the left there is list, and then y1, y2, y3, and on the right there is again list, and down below there is some linear combination of x's, linear combination of x's, linear combination of x's, right? And then Mathematica has a built-in operation called thread, and the built-in operation thread essentially replaces the order of the top two layers, provided these two are equal. So it will become a list of equal, and so the first equal will be between the first entry of this and the first entry of that. So y1 and whatever sum you have here. The second equal will be between this first this and that. So y2 and that and so on. Okay? So if you don't believe me, so the usual thing is to ask Mathematica what it thinks it does. So thread, well, actually, that's not terribly useful. But maybe I'll just show you an example. So let's thread, f of g 1, 2, 3 with g of 4, 5, 6. It's actually close to the transpose function. So basically, so this should give us, well, let's see, what does it give? What? Oh. Did I have to specify? Maybe it had to be a list? Not just an arbitrary F? No, what did I do? I messed up. Sorry. No. Oh, so it's the other way. The inner things must be lists. And then there is an optional argument to say, let's allow to thread over other things as well. So sorry, I blundered. I thought I knew what I'm doing and I wasn't. So let's replace it again, and then this should be a list, and this should be a list. And now it worked. Anyway, so let's do it to the equality we have here. So let's take this equality from before and thread it. So just apply a thread to both sides. Sorry, I got drawn into Mathematica syntax. Now I have a list of equations. This is the list of equations I want to solve. But I wanted to add to it the equation y1 is equal to x2. Okay? So I declare my set of equations to be, this thing, union y1 is equal to x2. Okay? So that's easy enough, and this is the set of equations. And now I want to solve these equations for y2 and y3, right? This is exactly what my scheme is. So let's see, what do we get? Well, no solutions. Why no solutions? Because I made a mistake. And the mistake is, it's actually not that we want to. So you see, first of all, mathematically speaking, there are four equations, so I should be solving for four things. Okay? Secondly, said differently, so or Mathematica regards this equation y1 is equal to x2 as an equation that you cannot solve. By setting the variables y2 and y3, you cannot make this be true. Okay? So actually what we should have done was we should have solved this system of four equations for the four unknowns, y2, y3, y1, and x2, and then from that solution, drop the two things we don't care about. So basically, we should be solving for, you know, the unclamped outputs, but also the two clamped things, which for which the solution will be that they're equal, and then we just will forget the placement of the clamp. Okay? So let's do that. So let's solve the equations, but now with respect to four variables. And oh, now I have good solutions. Okay? So, okay, so first of all, y2 and y3, the two things that I care about, are given here. Y1 and x2 are equal, as they should be, and I want to forget this information. Okay? Okay, next, okay, so but first let me store this into some variable. So I will set the solution to be equal to the same thing that I did in the previous line. And then again, there is a slightly annoying Mathematica syntax issue. So when Mathematica solves a system of equations, it will give you a list of lists. So it's a list of solutions, because an equation might have more than one solution. And then within each solution, it's a list of rules of where should each variable go. So it's a list of, so again, each solution is a list of possibilities. So linear equations have only one solution, so this is a list of length one. The list of solution is of length one, but it's still a list of solution. So I need to take, so you know, I could do, you know, I could say that the solution I care about is equal to, well, look at all of these solutions and look at solution number one. So take the first element of the list. And so now this is it. Okay? I could, you know, each of these is good enough, actually. I could say, let's look at all solutions, but then apply the function first. And the first function first applied to a list takes the first element of the list, so that's still that. Or, you know what, let's forget the last one. This is the option I chose, but let's just forget it. It doesn't matter, okay? Anyway, the next thing I want to do is, I want to, okay, I want to rewrite these in a matrix form, right? Because I want to see what the resulting matrix is. Okay? And so how do I do that? I need to, well, for each of the y's that I care about, so for example, y2, I need to see what the solution does to it. So I need to, so the solution is a list of rules, so I need to see what the solution does to y2. Well, the result is that. And then within that, I need to look at the coefficient within that of, say, x3. Okay? And that's sort of that's one entry in the matrix. Now, if I wanted the and one last thing, I want to simplify this. And so Mathematica has a large collection of simplification routines, and it turns out that in this case the one which gives the most pleasing answer visually is a part. So if I do expand, I'll get, you know, a mess. If I'll do simplify, I'll get the same thing. If I'll do factor, I don't know, I'll probably get the same thing as before. And it turns out that a part gives the most pleasing answer in this case. Okay? And you'll see in a minute why it's the most pleasing. So anyway, now I just ask Mathematica to make a table of the coefficient within yi to which you apply the solution of xj, apply to it a part, and then I is 2 or 3, j is 1 or 3, and write everything in a matrix form. Okay? So, and this would be our answer. Okay? So, let me summarize the conclusion. Let me write the conclusion. So, the conclusion is that if I start from this matrix, so I'm just copy-pasting it to here, then, and let me make it into a text cell. So convert to, how does it go? I think Alt-7, take it. Basically, I don't want it to be evaluated. This is just, I'm only writing it for the show. So this goes to that under the operation of stitching 1, 2, 3. Okay? Oy, that was a whole mess. I'm sorry about that. Okay? Now, if my theories are right, this should be meta-associative. So let's test it. But of course, I'm going to test it not by, I mean, there's actually no need to test because we know it's true. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to implement this as a meta group, a meta monoid, and then once I have the implementation, I will really test the implementation by testing if it's meta associative. So now what I want is to, again, implement this as a meta monoid. So basically, I want to, I want to make the compute. So I wrote this computation as a one-time thing, and now I want to turn it into a thing that I can repeat. Okay. So I want to implement this. So I'll be a little clever about the way I implement matrices. So, or the way I deal with matrices. So in principle, a matrix in Mathematica is a list of lists. And then if you want to access a specific entry, so right, if I wanted to glue instead of 1 to 2, as I did over there, if I wanted to glue I to J, right, I would have to look at the IJ entry. I would have to peek into the matrix. But if I want my matrix to have rows and columns labeled by arbitrary lists of integers, sorry, in fact, arbitrary sets, then I would have to somewhere save the bijection between my sets and the integers, so that I would be able to pick into a specific entry of the matrix. Okay? So instead, I will do something clever. So instead of saving a matrix as Aij, I will save it as a quadratic form. So I will save it as sum Aij Tij Hj. So where Ti stands for tail number I, Hj stands for head number j, and really what it means is two sets of variables basically formal variables saving the matrix. Okay, sorry, I don't know, so for some reason it's coming out confused today. Okay, so maybe I'll start with an example. So let's look at instead of this matrix, say, so here is a matrix. I don't know, maybe now I'll set this to be my matrix A. So instead of saving this as a list of lists, I will save it as, I guess I could write it as a sum. But alternatively, I could write it as I take this matrix, apply it to H1, H2, H3, HS, and then dot product it with T1, T2, T3, TS. Okay? So this will be a quadratic form. In fact, maybe I should expand it just so that it will be obvious that it's a quadratic form. So here it is. So Psi, uppercase Psi, is multiplied by HS, TS, and so on. Okay? So now if I wanted to access a specific entry, I would have to differentiate with respect to the relevant variable. So if I wanted to find what the entry in the 3-2 position was, I would have to look at this matrix, or I would have to look at this expression, I don't know, let's call it Q. So I would have to look at Q and differentiate it. So escape PD is the partial derivative symbol. And then I want to differentiate it with respect to, I don't know, I forget which one I was looking for. If I'll differentiate with respect to T2, I'll get the row of T2, which is a full combination of H's. And then if I'll take this and differentiate it with respect to H3, I'll get the 2-3 entry. Okay? Okay. Sorry, Okay, next thing is... one more thing. It's often useful to work with labeled expressions. So instead of just working with the quadratic form, I will, whenever I see this quadratic form, I will put a head gamma zero on it. Okay? So, so really, the thing I would store is not Q, but gamma zero of Q. So here is gamma zero. So again, gamma zero and then the quadratic form. Okay? Now, so the first program is kind of silly. Okay, sorry. Let's say that this is not terribly important. This is just how I print quadratic forms. So, you know, I'm saving it as a quadratic form, but I want it to print as a matrix. So I'm declaring that the way you format gamma zero of lambda is, and then I kind of wrote a little program that tells you how to print such a quadratic form. Okay, so it's not terribly exciting, but the moment I will execute it, and now if I will ask my computer to reprint zeta, then zeta will appear as a matrix, but now with labels for the rows and the columns, and since I have a place missing at the upper left, I will put the word gamma zero up there, because now I'm describing what I would like to call gamma zero calculus. Okay? Anyway, now comes the interesting thing. So far this is just formatting. Now comes the interesting thing, and maybe I'll split it into two and do them in the opposite order as when I prepared it. So, okay, here is the first interesting thing. So first of all, how does the stitching operation go? So if I want to stitch A and B, calling the result C, and this should be acting on a gamma zero element whose corresponding quadratic form is lambda. Well, first of all, I have to figure out those eight coefficients. So alpha, beta, gamma, delta, theta, epsilon, phi, psi, and xi. Okay? But each of those is a partial is a collection of partial derivatives. So alpha is the partial derivative with respect to ta, ha of lambda. Beta is the partial derivative with respect to ta, hb of lambda, and so on. Okay? The only thing is that, for example, xi, so xi is actually the remaining thing once you remove from the quadratic form all other things. So basically, you just have to remove from it, you have to set the variables t and h with subscript a or b to zero. Right? So, again, so if I wanted a specific entry of a matrix, so suppose I have a matrix and I regard it as a quadratic form, so if I wanted a specific entry, I would differentiate, but if I wanted to delete a row, I would set the corresponding variable to zero. So I just want to set, so anyway, this sets alpha, beta, theta, and all the things to the required variables. And then I output basically I essentially copy-pasted from above what I should be outputting. Okay? So let's see examples. So now the metamonoid operation is defined. So let's take, for example, zeta. So here's zeta from before. And stitch 1 and 2 to produce and call the output So let's apply to it the stitching of 1 and 2, calling the output 5, calling the output 5. So 1 and 2 disappeared, and instead I have column 5 and row 5, and the entries are as given by the formula, so it's a bit hard to see because, well, because I've used generic names for the entries. So anyway, okay, so now that I have that, I can actually test meta-associativity. So actually, again, I'm doing things in the wrong order, so. So let's, okay, so first of all, let's stitch 1 and 2 calling the result 1, stitch 1 and 3 calling the result again 1, and here's what you get. So the result is absolutely awful, okay? If you don't, so this is just a part of it, right? I need to scroll to see the rest. But if I do it in the other order and ask the computer to check if the two things are equal, the answer is true. So at least it's a metamonoid. Okay, it's actually not yet a metamonoid. Sorry, I don't know why I kept these. It's actually not yet a metamonoid because for the metamonoid I needed a disjoint union operation. So the disjoint union of matrices, okay, the disjoint union of two foosball boards is to put them side by side. On the level of matrices, it means turn the matrix into a block diagonal sum. On the level of quadratic forms, it adds the corresponding quadratic form. So I'm declaring that the product of gamma 0 with quadratic form lambda 1 with gamma 0 with quadratic form lambda 2 is gamma 0 with the quadratic form lambda 1 plus lambda 2. And now I have a full monoid. Sorry, I don't know. I don't know. Do you buy?
Yeah, that's fine.
Sorry, I mean, it's really ridiculously simple, okay? But but somehow I got in trouble with the implementation. Okay. Well, to get a tangle invariant, I need two things, right? I need a target space, so now I have a target space, but I also need values for the generators. Okay, so now I need to solve the Young-Baxter equations. Okay? So so let me do it again, completely generically, without any wisdom. Okay? So basically, I need to assign to the crossing a 2x2 matrix, so some 2x2 matrix, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, in such a way that the Rademeister move will be satisfied. Rademeister 3 move, so that the Young-Baxter equation would be satisfied. Okay? Now, I could write it in terms of stitching operations, where the stitching operations were defined, I just told you, I mean, I've just implemented them, okay? But in fact, it's even simpler than that. In this particular case, so the Young-Baxter equation is the equation corresponding to this times that times that is equal to, well, the opposite order. And I'm thinking of my, and here I actually never, so what I do here is I take the disjoint union of things. So, like, the operation happening here is I take the disjoint union of this tangle with that tangle. So, In the world of matrices, it's as if I took the two machines and put them side by side. And now I clamp this to this, clamp this to this, clamp that to that. I could write it as three stitching operations, but this is really just matrix multiplication. Okay? By the way, I could verify this. Suppose you don't believe me that this is matrix multiplication. I could just check that stitching, taking the disjoint union of three things and then stitching, is matrix multiplication. Should I? Is it too? You know, maybe it's a waste of time.
I mean, we can try it ourselves, right?
You
at home?
Yeah, you could try it yourself. In fact, that's a good exercise. Excellent exercise. Verify that taking the disjoint union of three things and then stitching the inputs of one to the, stitching them in the right way would give you simple-minded matrix multiplication. But it's sort of obvious from the way okay? So this really can be written as matrix multiplication. Now, what's the matrix corresponding to this? The matrix corresponding to this is, well, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, disjoint union, the matrix corresponding to a strand not connected to anything. This better be the identity. So it's that. So I need to satisfy that this times, okay, what's the matrix corresponding to that? So it's no, but the strands changed their identity by now. So if this was strand 1, strand 2, strand 3, then here I first put strand 2, then strand 1, then strand 3. So the matrix corresponding to this should be 1 at the 2 position, and then alpha, beta, gamma, delta. So I need to solve some equation of this form. Okay? But again, I'm lazy, so I let the computer do it. Okay? So first of all, in fact, I wrote something completely general. So this is the matrix corresponding to swapping, putting, or crossing 1 over 2. So I wrote something called RNIJ, and RNIJ is the, assuming that this is the matrix for 1 over 2, it's the matrix corresponding to moving I across J, in the presence of things going from 1 to n. So, how is it written? Well, okay, the keyword here is replace part. I don't know how replace part works, so let's figure it out. So replace part, well, there are lots of possibilities how to call it, but basically if you replace part inside an expression and you specify that the part in position I should have a new value, then it replaces the part in position I with the new value. So for example, replace part of f of 1, 2, 3, no, let's do it, f of a, b, c, and replace the part in position 2 by d, then I will get f of a, d, c, hopefully, yes. So what I'll do is I'll take the n by n identity matrix and replace the part in position ii with alpha, ij with beta, ji with gamma, jj with delta. And that's exactly what I did over there. So let's do it, and then let's verify it. So here is the just the ordinary simple-minded case, and here is the 3 by 3 case where So this is 3 by 3, but I'm crossing 1 over 3. So the result is, well, the second matrix I wrote. But of course, it's a bit hard to see, so let's write it in matrix form. Okay? Now, I'm sorry, time-wise, it's time for a break. I would prefer to continue another few minutes and then take the break. Is this okay? Good. So, next, so this is the left-hand side of the Young-Baxter equation. So remember, the Young-Baxter equation is R12, R13, R23 is equal to the transpose. So R23, R13, R12. But all of this is interpreted in the world of three-strand braids. So I need to basically look at R312 and so on. So here is the left-hand side of the Young-Baxter equation. 3, 1, 2, and then 1, 3, and then 2, 3. So this is a certain 3 by 3 matrix. Okay? And it's a bit hard to see. Maybe I should have printed it in matrix form. So same thing in matrix form. So this is the left-hand side. And you know what? Why don't I just print the right-hand side as well? So let me, just to see what it looks like. So here is the right-hand side, and here it is in matrix form. Okay, so a matrix might give me a solution of Young-Baxter if alpha squared is equal to alpha squared, alpha beta plus alpha beta gamma is equal to alpha beta plus alpha beta gamma. I suppose it means that alpha beta gamma is equal to zero, so at least one of the three should be zero. If this is equal to that, basically I have a system of equations to solve. Okay? But I have a computer, so I let the computer solve the system of equations. Okay? So, okay, so the system of equations is really, so I want to equate every entry of this matrix with every entry of that matrix. So first I'll convert each matrix to a long list of 9 elements, and then I want to equate each one with each one. So flattens a matrix into a long list. Okay, so if I'll do flatten of 1, 2, 3, should have made it a matrix. So a list of lists. So flatten of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 will simply turn it into one long list. Okay, so instead of a list of lists, it's a single list. So if I flatten the left-hand side, I get the 9 elements. If I flatten the right-hand side, maybe I shouldn't write it, but what I want to do is I want to equate the flattened left-hand side with the flattened right-hand side and then thread it so that it's a list of equations. So here is the list of equations. Oops, sorry, I mistyped. What did I do? Yeah. Sorry, I hit enter on the wrong line. So here is the list of equations. Now, if you remember, the first matrix entry on both sides was alpha squared. So the first equation is true. And the last equation is also true. But all other equations are non-trivial. But now I want to solve these equations for alpha, beta, gamma, and delta. Okay? So let's do that. And, okay, what do I get? First of all, I get a list of possibilities, right? Because, for example, I had one equation which was like, I think maybe the first one, alpha beta gamma is equal to zero. Alpha beta gamma is equal to zero is equivalent to either alpha or beta or gamma is equal to zero. So I have several possibilities. So now I have a list of possibilities, and in some of these possibilities, not all variables are determined. So if beta is equal to zero and gamma is equal to zero, then alpha and delta are free. Then alpha and delta are free. Okay? So it warns me that the equations didn't actually give values to all variables. I don't care. That's fine with me. So the next thing I want to do is, well, okay, so these are the solutions, but I want to see them as matrices. So I take R, I apply to it the solutions, and I view all the results in matrix form. So here it is. And here are my four solutions. So let's see. Which of those are useful? I mean, how do I turn it into something useful? So this solution is the transposition, right? So you map every crossing to just, well, you map every crossing to just transpose the two variables. Okay, the two. So that corresponds to the mapping from, well, basically, it will map every braid. So a braid is a combination of crossings where you only go vertical. It will map every braid to the underlying permutation. And in particular, it will not distinguish between overcrossings and undercrossings. So it's not going to be interesting. Okay? This one is also not interesting, but I would let you check why. Okay? And then let's talk about these two. Okay, first of all, both sides are cubic in R. So I can scale, right? I could multiply all matrices by a scalar and nothing would change. So by multiplying all matrices by a scalar, I could change alpha to be either 0 or 1. So let's first write the case where I replace alpha by 0. Okay? But doing this is exactly the same as saying that I add the equation alpha is equal to 0, and then instead of having the result depend on delta, I would like to call the remaining independent variable t. So let me solve the same system of equations where I set alpha to 0 and delta to t, and now I have those three solutions. Which solution died? I guess this. Yeah, I mean, here delta is forced to be 0. No, which solution died? Yeah, probably this one. Anyway, so these are the solutions in which alpha is 0 and delta is renamed to t. Okay. I actually didn't do my homework right. I'm sorry. I ran out of time. But I think all of these lead to non-interesting answers. But you have to verify why. Okay? So in all of these cases, the invariant you get is sort of stupid. In principle, each of these should give a not invariant, but they all turn out to be stupid. So the interesting case turns out to be when alpha is equal to 1 and I'm just renaming delta to be 2 t. So And here, this solution turns out to be stupid, and these two are transposed of each other, so they end up corresponding to equivalent results. So I'll just restrict my attention to one of them, namely this one, and this is my, and I'll continue working with this one. So I'm setting gamma zero of something that has a positive crossing to be that matrix, and I suppose for a negative crossing I would have to put the inverse of that matrix. So on a side I should compute what is the inverse of this matrix. So let's do this and I'll send it to matrix inverse. It's not called matrix inverse, maybe just inverse. Yes. So you can check that the inverse of this matrix is just the same matrix with T replaced by 1 over T. So therefore, I'm mapping negative crossings to the same thing as positive crossings, but with T replaced by 1 over T. And now I have a full knot invariant. If you don't believe, here is Rademeister 3, but now written using stitchings. So a crossing between 5 and 1, a crossing between 6 and 2, and a crossing between 3 and 4, this is the left-hand side. And then I stitch 1 and 4 calling the result 1, I stitch 2 and 5 calling the result 2, and so on. So basically these are the two sides of Rademeister 3, and they're equal. I guess there are two Rademeister 2s to check, and both of them work. And finally, if I really wanted to compute the invariant of some complicated knot, I would just type it in and stitch 1 to k, calling the result 1, and do it for k running from 2 to 16, because this is an 8 crossing knot. And here is the output. We lost. So the output came out uninteresting. Okay? However, the intermediate steps were interesting. So in fact, let me do the same thing, but instead of just printing the output, let me, at each step within the loop, let me print the current value of Z. So these are the matrices you get as intermediate steps, and they get more and more interesting, and at some point it collapses to not interesting. But you see, the matrices you get along the way are invariants of tangles. So as an invariant of tangles, it's interesting. As an invariant of knots, it isn't. And maybe we should take a break and continue after. So, or should, I don't know, should we go straight, or? I think we should take a break, okay? So.